football, fighting, and full of nonsense. The Stephen Housen Podcast. Made in Manchester.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Stephen Housen. This is the Stephen Housen Podcast. This is just me just doing a quick introduction, really, to an interview that I did with Brian Robson in a pub in... Where was it? It was in Hale in about 2014. Sorry, just adjusting the audio because it was redlining. I think it was about 2014 we did this interview with Brian Robson, and in it he talks about the England side quite a lot. And I mentioned it this morning on the Sunday paper review, a little bit about what he said in there. So I thought, do you know what? This would make a good podcast. This was put out as an MUFC Latest podcast when we had the MUFC Latest podcast. That's no longer available. So I thought, do you know what? Let's just use the audio now because it's decent audio. And why the hell not, basically. So here it is. Some of the information in there might not be so relevant. I think we talk about Moyes in there. This is about 2014, I think, about January 2014, if I remember rightly. In fact, I've got it on my computer now. Let me just have a look to see if I can find... Let me see if I can find what it says. When it was recorded. It was recorded... Oh, it's got it down as today. It wasn't recorded today. Anyway, so yeah, I think it was about January 2014. I might be wrong on that, but that's when I think it was. About 6 months into the Moyes period. So some of the stuff that we talk about isn't relevant anymore, but he talks a lot about his history of why he joined Manchester United. And some important stuff there, talking about the England national team as well. And when Brian Robson talks about the England national team, you absolutely 100% listen. Anyway, here it is. Go check it out. Please subscribe if you don't already. And also, I haven't got a guest lined up for this week. So if you think of anybody, tag me on Twitter and I'll see what I could do. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy it. See you soon.
Right then, we'll start at the beginning of your United career. When you joined United in 1981, I think it's pretty fair to say it was mediocre. What do you think would come out of the move when you first joined?
Oh, well, for me, the reason why I wanted to leave West Brom was because they sold a couple of our best players when we'd had a really good couple of years getting into Europe. So Len Cantelo and Laurie Cunningham, they left. And I just thought, you know, it's okay making money in football, but you want to win things. And so for me, West Brom sort of didn't look as if they were going to win anything after selling a couple of the best players. So that's why I wanted to move. And I just felt going to Man United, the tradition of Man United and everything, you've got a far better chance of winning trophies.
Even at that time?
Yeah, even at that time. I mean, United had still been to the cup final on quite a few occasions. Okay, Liverpool were dominant in the league at that time. But you just looked at United at that time, and with players like Stevie Coppell, Ray Wilkins, who I knew from the England days, I always felt like I had a good chance of winning things and improving things at United.
Which the next question is, did you think it was possible to improve them enough to win the league when you joined in
No, I always thought that Ron Atkinson would maybe have to make a few more signings, just in the fact that I knew Liverpool really well, and I mean there were so many of their players in the England squad, you know, people like Ray Clements and then sort of Phil Thompson, Terry McDermott, you know, they had loads of players in the England squad at that time. So you always looked at United and saying, yeah, well, we can improve, but we need a few more players in there to strengthen the squad.
Going slightly off topic from that, because it's just popped into my head as you mentioned there, there were so many Liverpool players in the England squad. Why did England underachieve when we was absolutely murdering it in Europe from 78, 79, 80s with Liverpool and Villa and Forest?
Well, I think if anybody looks back, in 82, I didn't think we sort of really underachieved. I mean, it was a shame that Kevin Keegan and Trevor Brooken got injured in that World Cup and they didn't really play much of a part in it. But because of the format of the World Cup at that time, you know, we played five games, we only conceded one goal, didn't get beat in a game, and yet you get knocked out of the competition, which was really disappointing when you look back. That France got to the semi-final and were really unlucky against Germany, who got to the final that year, because we beat France 3-1. So I thought at that time we could have had a great chance if it wasn't for the format of the competition.
Where would you put that 82 side against the 1990 side, which is, you know, maybe quite rightly called the second best side that England's ever had?
I would say that the 82 team was right up there and could compete against the 90 team. I mean, it's always difficult to judge in those cases. But it's like I say, I think we might have went on and achieved even more. Just even, like, okay, we spoke about Trevor Brooken, but even Kevin Keegan's just being fit for that competition. Because Kevin at that time,
European
player of the year, I think he won it twice, you know, around that sort of time. So it showed what a top player he was. And he could have been the one who could have just scored us goals in the quarter-final stage when we played against Spain and Germany, and we drew both games 0-0. I think that's as good, because I always think if you really want to do well in the World Cup finals, you need a top draw player in your side. And in 1990 we had Gazza, and in 82 unfortunately we would have had Kevin if he hadn't been injured.
Do you not include yourself in that in 1990? Obviously, it was cut short with injuries.
Yeah, I do, but I mean, in 82, I enjoyed it because I didn't get injured. Where, you know, in 86 and 90, unfortunately, after the first two games, you're injured. I really felt part of it, but it's just disappointing that you got the company. And then in 90 as well, it wasn't as if I stayed with the group like I did in 86. In 90, I had to come on because I'd snapped my Achilles and I needed to get it repaired for the start of the next season.
I'm still off topic here. This isn't what I'm covering right now. 96, you was assistant manager to England in the Euro 96.
Yeah.
They weren't close as well there.
I really enjoyed that. It was a great role being, you know, assistant to Terry Venables. And we did have a real good team then. You know, when you look back at Sol Campbell, Tony Adams, Insee, then you had like Sheringham and Shearer up front, the wide players, McManaman, and they were really good. And I thought we were a bit unfortunate in that competition. I mean, the first five penalties, the lads couldn't have took them any better than what they took them. We just needed Schultz to... was it Schultz?
No,
team. We just needed Dave to just pull a world-class save out of the bag. But it doesn't, like, everybody will joke about the Germans, but the one thing that they are very good at is taking penalties. And, you know, they held the nerve and took six fantastic penalties.
Yeah, it was probably the most enjoyable tournament I've ever witnessed as an England fan, I think, was the 96, because the whole atmosphere of the country being behind the team, felt we could do it, I think.
I think with it being in England as well, I mean, the fans just got right in behind it. They had that new song as well.
Yeah, Football's Coming Home.
Yeah, I think that sort of lifted the fans as well. But then the performances of the players was really good. You know, when you look at the performance against Holland, who were a top team at that side.
Yeah, that was a good one.
The way we played against them, and then obviously beating Scotland as well, which
the
is always great
Gazza
to beat them.
Well. That goal from Gazza is probably the most iconic one, and the celebration.
Yeah.
Well, right, I'll go back on track to where I wanted to be. So it's 1981. You've just signed for United. Big run from when he took over and when you signed over, seen a bit of resurgence from United, from finishing 8th, 10th sort of places to finishing 3rd and 4th consecutively for a few years. You had a couple of decent cup runs and a couple of cup wins. From what I've heard, Ron Atkinson's method of managing was quite relaxed and it was quite fun. And it apparently let the players get away with quite a lot. Did that, coupled with obviously the very famous drinking culture that yourself was a big part of, did that help create the foundations for a really exciting gung-ho team?
I think the only reason why we didn't go on and win the title that little bit earlier is because the squad wasn't big enough, and so when we had our first 11 out, we could always beat anybody, and that was even Liverpool. We could match them, and that's why we did well in cup competitions. But when it came to people getting injured and the squad players coming in to replace them, we just didn't get the same results. So I just think the squad needed them that bit stronger. And one realised that as well. But you can only spend so much money. You know, and Ron had already brought like Frank Stapleton, Remy Moses and myself into the club, which cost the club millions. But then you look back on, what was it, 85, was it, when we went
games.
To 10? Yeah. You know, we went on that run, but then John Gidman broke his leg at Ipswich, Gordon Strachan dislocated his shoulder at West Brom. I snapped my hamstring playing for England, and that kept me out for like 7 weeks. And then Paul McGrath had a knee injury which kept him out as well. So we lost those four players to the team.
It's the equivalent of modern day Rooney, Van Persie and Vidic missing, you argue.
Yeah, and Carrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was like then.
And we've seen over Christmas how that reacts.
Well, it does. I mean, no matter what club you are, you always want your best players to be playing, and that can make the difference in you having a really successful season or having a mediocre season. You know, that's why the top players.
Do you think there's any room for that sort of drinking or at least social side of things in the modern game? Or do you think that's
it's all gone that now. Yeah. I mean, it was all built out of proportion, you know, about sort of like the lads.
It was in here, wasn't it?
We used to come in here, Mulligan's. Yeah, when Mulligan's was going here, we'd come in here. But when people talk about a drinking culture and that, it's as if the lads were drinking every day, like, which was a nonsense.
Except McGrath.
Yeah, apart from Big Paul.
Have you read his autobiography? You mean you probably know the majority of it anyway. From
I mean, I was shocked when I actually saw how much Paul actually was drinking. You know, because I always thought that people like myself, Norman, Gordon McQueen, Kev Moran, Sparky, when we went out together, it would be, you know, that's the time when you went out, had a good laugh with each other and all that, bit of banter. But then you had that day out, and then you wouldn't let us do it for another 2 or 3 weeks. You know, and then it always had to be where we didn't have a midweek game, which wasn't very often because we always did quite well in the cups at that time. You know, so, but I think sometimes when you look back, it's good for the lads to actually relax and have a drink together. Then you find out a little bit more, but you're relaxed, and then when you get back down to serious work and you're training hard, you're a bit closer because you've had those days out where you're bonding together.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Paul's book. It was the best autobiography I've ever read at the time. I think Tyson's might have just topped it at the moment. Tyson's is fantastic.
I mean, Paul, I didn't realise, you know, he had the problem.
Two cans to go training.
The problem
that
he had. Yeah.
Just wanted to give him a hug, I think, after reading that. Back on Big Ron, what do you think was the main factor in his departure in 86? And was it premature?
Well, I think it was... you know, because we weren't getting any closer to the title.
Just sort of the same thing. Yeah. Even though it's consistent, it was...
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of managers at a lot of clubs, it would have been fine what Ron's record was with United. And, you know, winning a couple of FA Cups and all that, people would have been dead happy. But the expectations at Man United are bigger than that.
Yeah. As David Moyes is finding out.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue for keeping Ron on board when what followed next was Sir Alex. The three bleak years from Alex coming to the first FA Cup win, the Ta-ra Fergie banner and all of that pressure, why do you think the board kept the faith, and how many of the players honestly, really thought that Fergie was the man?
No, well, you could actually see the board kept the faith because sometimes from the outside people don't see what work or the work that you're doing within a club. And so what the board could see was The hard work that Archie Knox, the gaffer, Brian Kidd, when he brought him in, Nobby Styles, and then the effort that they were putting into getting the youth structure right around the club. And then his first few signings, you know, started doing really well. People like Brian McClair, and that, they were being successful. So I always think the manager's nearly always judged by his signings. And, you know, Alex's first few signings were very, very good. You know, so that's why, even though we weren't doing, we never looked as if we were going to win the title at that time, you could still see that he was improving the club. And so that's why the players had a belief in him as well, because then all of a sudden when he brought people like Konchelskis in, Brucey, Peter Schmeichel, that you just looked and you thought, the squad's getting stronger and we really do have a good chance here now of being successful, which 90 was the start of it. Because with the young players, I think the 1990 FA Cup win, it gave the lads confidence to go on, it gave the gaffer that bit more belief and confidence in himself.
Do you think it really did buy him time with the board?
I don't think he was ever going to get the sack. I spoke to Martin Edwards, and when everybody used to talk about Martin Edwards, never thought of sacking Salix. You know, but the media, they wanted to play on it because we weren't doing particularly that well in the league that year. But the gaffer got a good cup run going, and then, you know, you win that, and then after that, the confidence was there.
Big time. Ah, well, 1990 was my first season. I was six.
Yeah.
That might make me feel a little bit old.
I mean, 91, beaten Barcelona, who were a top team at that time, and we'd had 5 years out of Europe because of the ban. I mean, winning the 91 against Barcelona, I think that gave everybody the belief to go on and win the title the next year.
It's pretty relevant, the change between Big Ron and Fergie, to what's going on right now at the club. What actually changed in the day-to-day workings for yourself as a player? How difficult was it adapting to a new manager that had, you know, relative success, really? And what advice would you give to the current players that are dealing with the change?
I feel that, you know, on the training ground, there's not really that much difference to what coaches do and the routine that you go through. You know, so Ron was really relaxed, and he'd join in training and that, things like that. Where Silence came in, and it was very similar, you know, 7v7 or 8v8, small sided games, that type of thing. But the intensity had to be really, really strong, you know, very upbeat. Everybody had to take training really serious instead of a bit more joyful with Ron. And then around the club, it was just sort of disciplined things. I mean, Ron was quite strong on, you know, when you could go out for a drink and when you don't. Timekeeping, you know, he would fine you if you weren't good with your timekeeping, all that sort of thing, which Alex was. But then I think the biggest difference between Sir Alex when he came to Ron was the preparation and the detail he went on about the opposition. So when you were playing against whoever, his preparation and his team talks and that would be a lot more intense than what
about what the threats of each team were, about the strengths of what team were, the weaknesses were.
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, he'd be a lot more like that, where Ron would, like, his team talks were all about how we would play, how we would play and enjoy it and go out and express yourself. And so
I imagine Keegan must have been very similar to Big Ron.
Keegan.
From what I've heard, Kevin Keegan was all about going and express yourself, enjoy yourself. And
yeah.
I think that does create exciting teams, doesn't it? But the evidence suggests it, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and then I think when you like that as well, I think you look for more of flair players, which I think Ron did. When you look at his buys and that, it was more flair players rather than the down to really hard working players, that sort of side.
What's the sort of thing that Ferguson would say at half time? Not the famous hairdryer type stuff, but
No, it was always just small things. You'd just pick up on things where if somebody was giving you a problem, you know, he'd maybe change it just a little bit tactically, so then that problem would go away. The most thing he always used to talk about was really the tempo of the game. He always wanted the tempo to be really high, so then it's one two touch passing, so then you get the movement going and everything as well. So if we were a bit lethargic and taking too many touches on the ball, then he would have a right go at everybody, not just an individual.
I've heard Gary Neville give an interview recently where he mentioned that sometimes before the biggest of games, he would sit everyone down in the dressing room prior to the game and he would talk about a man that he met that day. Someone he's met in the shop,
Sir Alex. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, before the game, he'd let you have the racing on TV until 10 minutes before. And then he'd come in the dressing room, turn the telly off and say, get your head onto the game now. But that's sort of like 10 minutes before the match. And he wouldn't really... when he was having his team talk, he would talk about individual stuff and that type of thing. But once he'd finished that team talk, which was like an hour and a half before the game, now he'd go out and he'd go and have a cup of coffee in his office and... just chill out there. We wouldn't really see it until sort of 10 minutes before you're going to go out onto the pitch, and now he'd come back in and just remind people things that he wanted to get across.
So from half one, quarter to three generally on a Saturday,
you wouldn't see the guy,
and it'd just be the players just trying to chill out, relax, mental preparation for themselves. And
well, everybody has their own thing, you know. You either listen to music or I mean, there was a lot of us in that team, so people like Incy, Brucey and all that, we all like to watch a racing on TV. That few of the lads would have had a bit of a bet and all that, and so you'd be like that, but then you get other lads who just keep themselves to themselves and do their own ritual as far as warm-ups and all that was concerned. Everybody's different in the way that they prepare.
I've covered a little bit of this already, but was you aware of any sort of momentum building in the club once we started to collect the trophies from 90 onwards? You've already sort of touched on that a little bit with mentioning the European Cup Winners' Cup.
from that year when we won the Cup Winners' Cup, because that year we were dead unlucky. I mean, we should have won it, the title that year. Leeds won it, and you know, fair play to Leeds. You know, if you win the title, you deserve to win it. Mm-hmm. But I thought the FA were really harsh on us because they wouldn't allow us to spread the games out because we were really successful in all the cup competitions. I think we got the League Cup final as well, didn't we, that year?
Yeah, 92.
Well, 91, 92 won it that year. Yeah.
And so we won the League Cup that year with Mickey Phelan.
Well, yeah, what I can remember of that year is that the last eight games we had to play four games in a week, and then the next week play four games again. So we were playing like Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Saturday, and where we'd been beat in 32 games. I think it was something like that. In about 32 games, we'd been beat twice. In the last eight games, we got beat four times, and that's what cost us the title.
I do remember that period. I was 8 years old or something like that, but I do remember, I think, was it Nottingham Forest game quite towards the end of the season where I think we may have blew it? I remember leaving, not really fully understanding what had happened, the gravity of it all, walking out with my dad being devoured and me not really understanding.
Yeah, I think Sheffield United, we had a bad result down there. We got beat at Liverpool 2-0. And then West Ham beat us as well, and we drew down there, which was a Thursday night game, and all that. And it was just like the run of games. We got a few injuries as well, so the boss couldn't sort of freshen it up. But because of that, and then winning the cup, everybody looked into it, and like 92, 93, we're looking at Gaffer brought Cantona in, and we're thinking, we could win the title this year, no danger.
I had my 8th birthday the day that Cantona signed at the club, and half of the, I had it in the museum, because that's how much of a geek I am. And half of the museum tour was cancelled because of Cantona signing. Yeah. I didn't know who he was. And you know the shirt that's just got Cantona on me, no number? The club gave me that as as like a sort of sorry. You couldn't have the full tour for your birthday. How big an influence in the dressing room? The Class of 92 lot say that yourself and Eric are the two, and Sir Alex, are the main factors in how they went on as their career. But for yourself, how much did Eric bring to the team?
I think Eric was sort of like the final piece in the jigsaw, because we knew that we had great ability. We were a powerful team at that time, where if people wanted to mix it and try and kick it off the park, we knew that we could kick them off the park without any problem. But then we had great pace with like Giggsy coming through then, and Sharpie, Kanchelskis. Yeah.
Do you have some more drinks?
Do I another one? Yeah, well, two points, please. yeah, and so, and then we knew that we had decent skill and ability in that. But I think Eric was the one who came in, and if you were struggling to score a goal, he could create or score a goal out of absolutely nothing, and that just put the icing on the cake, and that's why we won the title then, because of that.
The final game of the season where Alistair managed to get the only player that hadn't scored that season, finally managed to get on the score sheet. I believe the whole team was hungover.
Yeah, well, we'd
possibly still drunk.
Well, we'd already won the title, and so Brucey had phoned everybody, and he did invited everybody round to his house. So, yeah, that is a true story. That we're all there.
How hungover? Properly stinking, or just a bit worse for wear?
Well, the good thing is that it was an evening game. So when we left Brucey's house at about 5:30 in the morning, at least you could just lay in bed all day and sort of like get your rest in. But when Blackburn actually scored, I think all lads were just sort of like, nah, like he's gonna go here, shit. If we get beaten this game, whether we won the title or not, the boss is so like disciplined, and you know. We just thought we're going to be in big trouble. So I think that's when like the lads pulled it round and win the game 3-1. So it just kept everybody happy, and it finished off the season great.
Oh, fantastic. I remember Italia, Football Italia was popular at the time on Channel 4, and at Old Trafford at the time, flags was either banned or just not something you could take in very often. And I remember really specifically that day being amazed at how many flags had appeared, huge ones, and it's something that I'll never forget, I don't think, that day.
And then it was great as well, Sir Matt Busby, you know, in the stand, and that, and, you know, for him to be sitting watching, and we hadn't sort of won the title for that long.
Did he come and speak to the players afterwards?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he come into the dressing room. Alright, just congratulations and all that.
Gary Neville actually mentions in the Class of 92 film that Sir Matt's door was always open at Old Trafford, and he said he wished he'd have gone in and spoke to him more often.
Yeah, I mean, you do when it's like that. For some reason as a player, you don't really, but I was quite fortunate because I got to know Sir Matt really well, not because his door was open there, but a mutual friend of ours who was just a bit younger than Sir Matt, a lot older than me. But I met him and his wife in a pub on a Sunday, and I got quite friendly with them, and so I'd have a couple of drinks with them on a Sunday lunch. And then they started inviting me and my wife down to theirs for lunch. And then after lunch, Sir Matt would come round, and they'd have a few drinks. And so it was every so often on a Sunday, like I'd be standing with Sir Matt for about 3-4 hours, having a few beers, and he'd be having his whiskey because he loved a drop of whiskey. And then he'd be telling me all the stories and all this sort of thing that you know, his career had been about that. So I got to know Samat really well because of that.
Best advice he gave you?
No real advice. It was just more or less, you know, football stories, you know, which you talk about Bestie and Paddy Kerr and, you know, the characters of that team.
He had something to be fair, didn't he?
Well, I mean, see, when you look back at that, you nearly always say that a team that wins a lot and wins regular and then season after season after season, that they have strong characters. Like, I've met a lot of that team now, and you know, there's so many strong characters in that team, and like real good banter. You know? I mean, when I mixed with Dennis Law and Paddy and all these sort of people, they were just great company and like good banter, and that's what they like.
The United team of the 60s that eventually did win the European Cup with some three European players of the year, which I don't think we've ever even come close to since.
Yeah. Well, they were absolute top draw players. Well, I mean, Dennis Law to be named the king, and everybody in Scotland believed that. So you've got somebody like him, and you've got Sir Bobby, who's revelled all over the world, not just in this country, but you know, you go to South America and everybody knows him.
Sir Bobby's career, if someone told you about it, would almost be unbelievable. I think the fact he survives Munich. He comes through as a Busby babe, he survives Munich, he wins the European Cup, he wins the World Cup. He's the record goal scorer for England, he's the record goal scorer for Man United. It's over 100 caps, up until Giggs is playing on until his mid-80s or something. He's going to be probably the second highest appearances ever at United. If we've only got the one legend, I think it's got to be somebody myself.
Yeah.
Fantastic. The career is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And all them goals, not even a proper centre forward.
And the thing is, as well, he's a humble guy, and so he never gets carried away about anything. Like, he's sensible all the time. You know, and that's probably why he was such a great player. But then you also had George, who was just a genius on a football pitch. Like you said, though, you know, three European footballers of the year
in
one team.
You're gonna be successful, aren't you? Which is probably the reason why Barcelona have had their little period of success over the last few years.
Yeah.
With that many European players of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of Europe and successful teams or not, and Barcelona, our double win inside of '94 always comes up in the debates with United fans. '68, '94, which didn't win anything in Europe. '99, where do you rank them? For you, '94, where would you put that?
'94, that team could beat, could compete with any team. I mean, it's always different. You can't say that team's better than this. I mean, the one thing you've got to say is '99. It's an unbelievable achievement, like winning the treble. There's not too many teams that are going to be able or going to do that. You know, so you've got to give that squad of players a load of respect. But I think it shows that if you are going to win, it's funny because I was only talking about this yesterday to me and Brucey. I was at Brucey's yesterday, and we were talking about you need four top class strikers, and that's what United had at that time. The boss, whether he was lucky or whether it's just because of his man management, but how you can keep people like Teddy Sheringham, Andy Cole, Dwight York and Solskjaer, keep them happy and keep rotating them so then they're not playing week in, week out.
Out of each one as well.
Yeah. So, and that's why United won it, because the amount of goals that them four could score, you know, was incredible.
Yeah, I think I did like the '94 team, but I think because of what they achieved and a few other factors as well, I think the '99 team's the one for me. As a midfielder, yourself, you're a midfielder, that midfield of Beckham, Giggs, Keane and Scholes, does it get any better? The blend, the balance?
Well, all you've got to do is ask anybody if they'd love them four in the side.
When it came to leave United in '94, you took up the player manager role at Middlesbrough. You won promotion, first attempt.
Yeah.
You managed to assemble one of what I think is the most memorable teams in the early Premier League years with Juninho, Romanelli, Emerson, players like that. What sticks out as your most memorable moment at Borough? You also had a couple of Wembley trips which weren't successful.
Well, I mean, getting promoted, you know, first year, that was great. But then I really enjoyed the way that team, when we got to the two cup finals and even though we got relegated that year, I look back and it was very similar to what I was talking about with Ron at Man United. Was that the squad? Great flair in the team, but the squad just wasn't good enough. So when we were getting to all these quarterfinals and then semi-finals and you're playing replays and all that, and you get to the two cup finals, when we got to a Saturday for a league game, the lads were out on the feet and I couldn't do anything because I didn't have a squad. So you couldn't rotate them around or anything, you couldn't rest them. If you get an injury, you know, there's nothing really you can do. And that's why we got relegated, you know, because of that, because of their own success. But it was really enjoyable working with people like Emerson and Juninho and Ravinelli and that. And then some of the British lads as well were decent players, you know, and it was just the foreign boys. They took all the publicity because they had just that little bit of extra flair.
Juninho had it in buckets,
didn't he? Yeah, I mean, it was a shame because when Juninho, when he did leave and he went to Spain, I mean, he had the bad break on his ankle, which was a shocking tackle by one of the Argentinian lads. But unfortunately, he wasn't the same player after that.
The as a player manager, it's not a role that you really hear of at the moment, especially in the Premier League. How difficult is it to leave yourself out?
No, it was quite easy for me to leave myself out. But it
you
was
played 38 games one season.
It was Viv Anderson and John Pickering, the other first team coach. It was them two who kept, if I said I was leaving myself out, them two had got no chance, you were playing. It was them who used to persuade me into keep playing. Because at that time we had, they didn't have great flair, but there was two central midfield players, Robbie Mostow and Jamie Pollock. And they were really hard working. And they were okay.
Jamie Pollock was a hard man.
Oh, yeah, like both of them good tacklers and just keep the ball nice and easy. So they didn't really give the ball away that much, but they didn't really have great flair where they could score a lot of goals or create a pass. You know, so I used to look at them and I used to go, no, I can have a rest like today and that. But it was Viv and John Pickering who taught me out and they'd always sort of try to get me to play.
You had a couple of brief spells at Bradford, back to West Brom where you played, and Sheffield United, which didn't go so well. Any comment across those? Any regrets?
No, well,
anything you wish you could have done?
Bradford, I mean, like, we wouldn't have got relegated if they didn't go into administration. But once you go into administration, it's just a nightmare. I mean, all the loan players who were doing well for me had to go back to the clubs, and then people came in and they were buying all the best players for absolute cut prices. Yeah, I mean, it's just a joke. And so really when we actually went into administration and the chairman told me, I should have said, look, this wasn't the deal when I said I'd come in and be manager for that season. And so I should have left then, but I just felt sorry for the boys. They were having to take half the wages.
That can't be good for them.
And all that sort of thing. So I thought, I can't leave when these lads are taking half the wages and all that sort of thing. So that's why I stayed on there. So it was a bit unfortunate because they are a decent club, Bradford. You know, and they've got a decent hardcore support of about 13,000-14,000 there, which gives you a good chance to be quite successful. West Brom really enjoyed it, but me and the chairman just didn't see eye to eye. And then when he said he was taking over all the scouting system and he's going to buy and sell the players, I just said I can't work like that.
You do occasionally hear that these whispers that Abramovich does a lot of the buying for Chelsea, isn't it? It must be impossible to work with this.
Yeah, but if I was on 4 or 5 million quid a year, I think I'd be handling it.
Well, and the players that he's buying are £50 million players as well. I mean,
yeah, that's right. You're working with the top players.
Although he's not really done so well there, Torres, there's nobody that's foreseen him not doing so well. I think when I when I heard about the transfer, I think I panicked a little bit. I thought, Christ, they're going to be in something now they've got him there. Luckily for us, it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, and then Sheffield United. I mean, that was a good club to work for, but for whatever reason, the fans just didn't take to me right from the start. I don't know whether it was because of the Man United connection and all that.
traditional rival of ours.
But I felt that, like, I'd changed the squad around, and in January, we'd only been beaten 1 in 9 games, and we'd got to the quarter final of the Cup against Middlesbrough. And we drew away at West Brom, who were running away with the league that year, and we drew 0-0 away, and I thought we played really well. We could easily beat West Brom on the night. Next day, the chairman got me and he says, look, the fans, you know, we can't go on like this because the fans are just against you, Brian, and I don't think you can turn it around. So I went, yeah, fair enough, all of that. So we left, but yeah, I was only there 8 months. And I did feel that the team was starting to get better.
To turn around,
yeah.
In 2009, you went and managed Thailand. How did that come about?
It was Reedy. Peter Reed, he'd been manager there for a year, but he wanted to come back into the country, and he got the proposition from Stoke to come back as their assistant there. And Reedy phoned me up. He went, oh, he says, I've enjoyed it. He says, but I just need to get back into the English game. He says, but you know, they're looking, and the guy really fancies chatting to you. And so then me and the wife jumped on a plane, went across there, and I was supposed to be just negotiating what it was all about, and just having a look. And when we got there, they had a press conference and everything, and announced me as manager. And I'm going, whoa, hold on a minute. But the press conference was more or less done, so it put me in a strong position when we went in to actually negotiate.
I like it. But did you move out to Thailand?
Yeah, we lived in Bangkok for 2 years. And it was a great experience, like really good. And I would... club management, I would say, no, not unless a massive club came in for me. Don't really fancy club management again, but international management I really enjoyed, and you know, that would be something I would maybe look at in the future.
Somewhere nice and sunny, I imagine.
Well, it's always Jamaica, nice if it is. If it is in the sun, at least it makes it quite nice.
What's the standard of football out there in Thailand? Because it's not, you don't really hear many Thai players coming over to the Euro.
I mean, with their culture, you'll not see too many Thais in European football, because the diet, the way that they train, they really are fit, but they've got no strength. And so when you play against a European side, or you play against some of the Arab teams, they're just far too physical for them. But there's some great players with technique out there, but then they're very naive on defending and that as well, because in their coaching regime, they don't have any badges or anything like that. If you're an ex-player or you're a big businessman and you want to run a football team, you can just do it.
Just prior to you taking that job, you started as a global ambassador at United. Was that on hold while you took the job, or was you still sort of doing some work for United?
It went side by side. Because I was like an international manager, it didn't conflict with Manchester United or another club. And then because United had moved into the Asian market, a lot of appearances were over there, so the club would just phone me up saying, how busy are you at certain times?
Stick a United polo shirt on the way.
Yeah, and can you do this? And so the Thai FA, they were all completely happy about me still working for United as well as working for them.
I suppose it helps pump up them as well a little bit, doesn't it? When you're
doing
United
business. Yeah, because like 80% of Thai people support Man United anyway.
What's your responsibilities at the club now as an ambassador?
No responsibilities really. I mean, all I do is, you know, I've got my appearances where I work with the partners, You know, I work at home games.
That's what I've seen you doing in the South Downs week. Yeah, come and say hello to people.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, I mainly do that, but when people see me at away matches and all that, I don't have to go, but I just like to go and watch the team play. You know, so that's off my own back. So it's mainly just working with the partners, you know. And, I mean, sometimes that'll not be just at Old Trafford, it'll be abroad, which I quite like as well, because you go and you visit all these different countries that you maybe haven't been to. So it's an interesting job, because there's always little bits of different stuff to be doing.
The pressure's off, I suppose, when you're not playing as well, and we do go to a European away, you can just go and enjoy the city a little bit more than...
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously I want United to win all the time, but if you don't have that nerves as when you're a coach, or you're really involved in the coaching side of it, you get all that nerves and, you know, decision making and all that, so you get all that when you're in the job. When you're sort of like a global ambassador, I can sit there and relax and hopefully enjoy the game, but there's no pressure on me and I don't get any nerves.
Hey, everyone's a winner.
Yeah.
How different is the club as a whole, which I can guess at, from now to 1981 when you joined?
That's massive. I mean, when you look at the Cliff training ground, you know, we had one pitch and then the sort of a third of a pitch which was classed as Wembley, and then we had the one indoor gym there, and so that, I mean, the gym at that time was massive, and as good as what anybody else had in the country at that time. So they were in front of the time for that gym to be there. But now when you look at Carrington...
Do you visit Carrington often?
Yeah, I go down and watch training every now and again, you know, if I've got a bit of free time and that. And so you look at that, and it's just a different world now. I mean, we must have like 20 pitches. Some of the pitches are under soil heating. And then you've even got one building which is just a reception area to invite the partners if they're watching a game on a Saturday, they come down on a Friday to watch training and then go into this and have cups of tea and got their sandwiches and all that sort of thing. They just looked after unbelievable. And then the dressing room area, I mean, swimming pool, all this sort of thing. They've just got everything that you would want to have to be a top sportsman.
Where do you think the one city building's going to stack up?
No, that's going to be one of the best in the world. Yeah, I've seen the drawings for it and all that sort of thing. And, I mean, they're putting fortunes into their complex and around that area. And that's, so yeah, City's going to be something special.
The way they're playing on the pitch at the moment, City, I think I've got to make them favourites to win the league, unfortunately.
Yeah,
on the way, the Arabs are dealing with some of the off-pitch things, such as the training ground. I don't think they're going to be going away anytime soon, are they?
No, definitely not. You know, when you've got support in the back, and it's not just the wealth of the Arabs, it's the business side of it as well, and City are working hard on that as well as building a team. But when you've got that finances behind you and that, then
you know, 600 million since 2008.
Well, that's it.
On transfers,
it's your scouting system. As long as your scouting system is really good, you're going to get all the best players.
Speaking of which, our current playing staff, a lot of people see the midfield as our weak point. It's been neglected for a couple of years, and I would agree with that. What's your view as one of the best midfielders we've ever had?
No, I think everybody's been talking about it for quite a few years now, the central back. But the thing is actually having a look and seeing where there's a top midfield player in the world, and can you actually buy them? You know, City did really well when they got Toure, but you've got to say that's the type of player that we could do with in our midfield. But I don't think it's as doom and gloom as what a lot of people are saying at the moment. I just think when you're missing players like Rooney, Van Persie and that for a long period of time, your results are not going to be as good as what they are if them two are in the team.
Well, goals win games, and those two definitely bring goals.
That's what we were just talking about, you know, with the 1980. You know, and then there's a lot of pressure on Hernandez and Welbeck, because when the other two are out, it's up to them to score goals. But as a midfield, we're not scoring enough goals neither. So that's where we're missing. You know, thankfully Ashley Young looks as if he's back to a bit of form, and he's scored a few goals the last few games he's played. And he's
not average goals either.
No, they've been decent goals, yeah. That's what they need. But for me, the players have got to have it. It's not just Dave Moyes and, you know, what he's changed, because he's hardly changed anything, because I've been in, I've watched training, and it's very similar to what the boss used to do. He's a hard-working guy, he's a deep thinker about the game and everything. And sometimes, as a player, you've got to look at yourself as an individual and say, hold on a minute, I'm underperforming and I haven't done my job this year. Because you've got to look and you've got to say, everybody's saying this team's it's all gone to pieces. Hold on a minute, this squad of players, they won the title by 11 points last season. So what's happening this season? You can't blame the manager. You've got to look at yourself as a player and say, can I do better?
The individual performance of the players have definitely been of a lower standard than last year, right across the board. And you've also got age creeping into the likes of Rio, Evra. Vidic has been missing for quite a lot of the season, and as we've mentioned, Van Persie and Rooney have both been missing for big chunks of the season. We've had Fellaini come in, who I thought was going to be a great signing, and he's not really settled, and he's also had the injury. And I think the club has been suffering from a little bit of a confidence problem, which could have been down to the boss leaving. But we've also lacked a little bit of ingenuity and a little bit of sparkle, and I think Juan Mata is, although maybe not the most dire need of a player that we need, when that sort of player comes available, you've got to take it. And I think he's going to slot straight in and be a real big asset for us.
Yeah, I mean, he does. He looks a good side. I mean, his record is proven by that, because you won Player of the Year 2 years on the belt at Chelsea, and you've got to be a real good player to be able to do that. There's only one little question where you look at it, you go, hold on a minute, why doesn't Mourinho fancy him as a player? Why is he selling him?
He seems to do that everywhere he goes. He sort of ostracises someone to sort of stamp his authority, I think.
Yeah, maybe that is the case. But looking at it as a selfish point, we've got to look at him and go, well, you look at him, and for people like Michael Carrick and all that, he's going to be a great outlet. When Rooney and Van Persie are both back in the team, you could see them being on the same wavelength as far as your football brain's concerned, and you can see the link up being really good.
Who excites you in our current squad, besides Mata?
Well, I've always really liked Michael, even though Michael hasn't really played as well as the last couple of seasons. I think Raphael's been a little bit rash compared to what he was last season. I think Johnny Evans can still improve and be a really good player, because he had a real good season last season. And then obviously Rooney and Van Persie are, yeah, you know, obviously for me, I think the top class, both of them.
How far do you think Jan Oblak can go?
I think he's still got a bit to learn, you know, but he's got great ability, the way he drifts past people and everything like that. And he will get stronger, you know, he's only 18, so.
Yeah, physically I think he has.
Yeah, but you don't really have your full maturity until you're maybe 21, 22, 23. So by the time he gets to that, he'll be that little bit more powerful because of pre-season and the training regime that you're going through. So yeah, I think he's going to be a top player. But as a young lad, you've still got to learn things, and he's got to know when to be able to pass, when to shoot, and you gain that by experience.
Do you think we'll sign anyone before tomorrow at 11?
I wouldn't have thought so now.
No, I don't think it'll happen now.
I'd be very surprised if we buy anybody at this moment.
Who would your pick be if you could sign anyone in the world? to improve this team, or realistic rather than Ronaldo or Messi?
Touré.
Touré?
Yeah.
I don't think he'd have a cross from, if I could get Yaya Touré,
put him in our midfield, because I think he's ideal for Michael Carrick and he's ideal for the type of player that we need within our team. Somebody who can score goals from the centre of midfield but can get box to box and has got a bit of presence about them.
As one of our most iconic number sevens, what sort of importance do you place on the number seven shirt?
I don't really put any sort of importance on the number seven shirt. It's the player who wears the number seven. You know, can he be a top draw player? You know, I mean, Matas took the eight.
I think everyone expected him to take the seven as well, didn't they?
Yeah, so he didn't really fancy the seven. But all I would like to see is, you know, just a real top player playing in the number seven and playing at Man United, and hopefully, you know, we can get that, whether it's, I can't see it being this window, but, you know, in the summer, can we buy a top draw midfield player to go with the squad of players that we've got? I mean, the good thing about what I see at the moment is Darren Fletcher being back.
Shocked that he's come back so
well. Fletcher's a real good player, and he might just need a little bit more time to get his 100% fitness, but I can see him after a pre-season, and, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, everything goes well for the lad. He can come back and he's going to be like a brand new player for us next season, and he is a good player when he's playing.
What was your best moment in a United shirt and what was the worst?
I think best moment, it's got to be the title, where we won the title first time. You know, because it just helped everybody take the pressure off everybody, and people could just get on with enjoying the football, and people couldn't keep saying 26 years, 27 years, 28 years, and all that. So that would be a mess. Was disappointing. Probably in '83 when we got beat off Juventus. We beat Barcelona in the quarter final, and then we got Juventus in the semi, and then I did my hamstring, and so I missed the two Juventus games. So when we got beat and we got knocked out by them, that was a real disappointment.
Maradona was in that Barcelona team in '83,
yeah.
How good was it?
He showed it in an actual World Cup that he was a world class player. You know, down in Mexico when Argentina won it. Fantastic goal he scored against us in the quarter final. I know I'm not talking about the handball one, but then in the semi final, he scored a fantastic goal against Belgium as well. And then, you know, that put Argentina into the final, then to win it. He was top class player.
That Barcelona game's often cited as the best atmosphere Old Trafford's ever seen.
It was the best atmosphere I'd ever experienced at the club. Yeah.
We've got some questions now from some of our followers on Twitter, and the first one is, when are you going to be joining Twitter?
Never.
Never? Can we not persuade you?
No.
Paddy Carreira loves it.
Yeah, but Paddy's a gobshite.
Who was your most difficult opponent?
As an individual, not really. I mean, most difficult opponent, Liverpool, when they kept winning the title all the time. It used to rile me.
Who was your best friend at United and at England?
I'd like to think that I've got a lot of good friends and everything like that, but if I did pick one out, I mean, like Ray Wilkins, I got on great with Ray because we sort of like moved together in England youth team, and then I knew Ray, you know, when I come to United, and then obviously going away with England, so I got him, and I always go out with Brucey and all that, even now.
Who in modern football do you think resembles your style the most as a player?
I would like to think Gerrard. I've always liked Gerrard and the way he plays the game.
Yeah, I suppose that's pretty good fit, actually.
Yeah.
And especially the way he plays for England as well.
Yeah.
Who was your favourite partner in midfield? Who did you always like to be next to?
There's a few there because I know I only played with him, you know, for a couple of years, and Keady was only 1 year. But I've got to say, like, Ray Wilkins when I first came, because that would always release me because of the way Ray played, and he liked to get the ball off the back four, and it allowed me to get forward to score goals. So I enjoyed playing with Ray, and then I've got to say that Insey and Keady were both good midfield players to play with.
We've already said blank check. Who would you sign and why? Best stadium outside of Old Trafford that you played in?
Bernabeu.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
One matter. Cantona style catalyst.
I would like to think so, but I'm not too sure. He'll stamp his authority on it as much as Eric actually did in that first couple of years.
Clubs are different levels.
Yeah. But I think he will have a big influence on United.
Do you still play five-a-side or any sort of football anymore?
Yeah, I still play in a few charity games. I'm fortunate that I can still sort of get run about. But rather than play five-a-side like some of the boys do to keep fit, I'll just go for a straight one so that I'm not straining on the joints.
What are you doing on Saturday afternoon? Fancy a game at Stoke?
I wish I could, I tell you.
All right, Brian Robson, thank you very much.
No, cheers.